We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is Tyrese Haliburton, and you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Indiana, home of Pacers basketball.
Miller for three, and he got it.
Legends have been born.
Miller retreats to the three-point line.
Memories have been made.
Haliburton, a deep three for the lead.
Bam, baby!
Great basketball has been played.
Nembhard away. Hits a three at the buzzer to win the game.
In 49 states, it's just basketball.
Flips it to the big fella, fake shoots, and hits!
But this is Indiana.
Flips it down.
And you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Let's go!
Your go-to Pacers podcast.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
We got Pacers hooping. Let's talk stats. Hot takes. All facts. New topics. Updates. Three-pointers. Fast breaks. We keep scoring. We don't need to stop. New episodes. Weekly drops. This your number one podcast. Sweeping every team. We gon' need a mop.
Setting like the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Pacer Nation, what's going on? Welcome back to another episode here of Setting the Pace, your go-to Pacers podcast. We are going to talk about a 133-116 victory over Paul George and the Los Angeles Clippers. And here to join me today is the host of the Ride with JMV, JMV himself. JMV, thanks so much for coming back on the show. That was a fun game tonight.
Alex, yeah, thanks for not only having me, but making sure I was up. Because that was going to be questionable, but I was. And, you know, part of the reason why I was up is because, I mean, it was such a good game. Such a good game, considering the circumstances. You know, the way they played coming off of back-to-backs like that, and that being in L.A. again with the Clippers, and that was impressive. I mean, it really was impressive to see them do what they did, and it was a collective effort.
I think that kind of speaks to the volumes of this team and how much they've grown this year in terms of being mature and handling business, because they really needed to get this victory to kind of keep some separation there in that sixth spot away from the 76ers and the Heat. Obviously, the Heat did not play tonight, but Philadelphia did go down to Sacramento on the road, giving the Pacers a little bit more cushion there. But I think we got to start off here just another great performance from Pascal Siakam. It feels like it has just become the new norm now. He's just cooking teams left and right in different variety of ways, and I've thoroughly enjoyed how he's done that so far.
Alex, the other thing about this is, too, I think once that whole trade went down, you know, he would still play well, but I thought his teammates, they weren't quite used to him yet. They weren't quite used to getting him and them in the flow of the offense, because you go back to the way they started out the season, and the flow was always there. The ball never stuck, seemingly. It was always moving around, and now – I know you have a place on the interior where you can go and get a bucket. So sometimes it's going to look like it's sticking. And I thought that it just took a little bit of extra time for his teammates to get used to how he plays and how he performs at a high level. And I think certainly recently, Alex, we've seen these guys getting in the flow with him, vice versa. And the outcome is, you know, it's funny. I think after the first, what, maybe a month or less when he was here, some people were calling me and saying, you know, I don't know if this is going to be a long-term guy or not. The way we've seen him play as of late, there is no doubt he is an absolute long-term. He's exactly what you want. He is necessary alongside Halliburton to go with Turner, all these pieces now fitting together. You just wish that Mathurin was out there. That's the only thing that's kind of bugs me about this entire thing, is because of that injury and how much that stinks. But in a night like tonight, you see all these guys come together and you can kind of see the collective flow going with them getting used to Siakam and Siakam getting used to them. And we see the results of that, Alex.
No, there's no doubt about that. I mean, over the last six games, 27.3 points for Siakam, 10.5 rebounds and 3.2 assists. And you're feeling it every night, because there's been games early on, like you said, they're trying to feel him out, and it felt like he wasn't getting the proper amount of touches or attempts in a game, even though he'd be shooting well from the floor. I think against Chicago just a few weeks ago, 8-12 from the floor, but didn't touch the ball very much. And you're trying to figure out the balance of when to get him shots and when not to get him shots. And he's trying to figure out when he should take him and when he shouldn't take him. So that definitely does play a big factor into it. But I think the way that Rick Carlisle has done a good job of staggering him and Tyrese to make sure one of them is always on the floor at all times has been huge to kind of helping keep both lineups afloat and always having a guy out there. But we saw where it didn't work out against the Lakers, because they kind of went away from that against the Lakers. And I think that those bench units, especially early on, were not as impactful as we saw them be tonight against the Clippers. So I'm hoping that that's something that they continue to do, because I like having that dynamic of at least one of Tyrese or Pascal always on the floor.
Yeah, I think the Lakers game was a little bit different, just because, and I thought Rick, you know, without getting fined, said, hey, it's tough to overcome that situation with the fouls and, you know, what took place in that, considering how much they went to the free throw line and made compared to the Pacers. And you really have to play well. I was surprised they actually came back. I don't know about you. And they lose by five, and there's no character building on that. But I just thought that that's a little bit different, because they were put in a bad spot. I mean, you could argue that it was defensively and they were out of position, but they got the benefit, I should say the Lakers got a benefit of a whistle, and the Pacers did not benefit from a bad whistle last night. And that's the other thing they had to put to bed, too. They had to put to bed the fact that, you know, that was one where you can look back and you go, man, you could have had that. Could have had that, and you miss it. And then you got to make up for that against the Clipper team that I think going in had lost four consecutive at home. You know, the one thing that stood out to me tonight, and this is just me watching the Clippers. I don't watch them all the time, Alex, but they don't look like at this point of the season they get along very well. Did you notice that?
Yeah. I mean,
there was a lot of yip-yapping going on out there. That's what happens if you have like three, four Hall of Famers, whatever they have on that squad, future Hall of Famers. But there was a lot of discontent on the floor out there. And really, it happened when things were mattering the most, when the game was kind of hanging out of balance, it was still winnable for them. So you could tell a bad spot for the Clippers is a really good spot for the Pacers. And I know you're going to talk about Jairus Walker. The more and more you watch him, the more and more you get bits and pieces of him in playing the minutes he played tonight, the more that you really understand and certainly like and hope that he's going to be a part of the rotation, because I thought he's really good tonight too.
Yeah, I mean, I do want to talk about what you said there with the Clippers and their jawing. There was a moment there, I mean, I think it was the second quarter, when Leonard just said something to Zubac about a rotation, and Zubac just about lost his mind. And I was enjoying every minute of Zubac on the floor for the Pacers tonight. Same with P.J. Tucker. It felt like when those two guys were out there, Indiana was really having their way. But, yeah, you talk about Jairus Walker. I mean, what a night for him, a career night and assist for him, with 7 assists in this game, 8 points, 29 minutes, 3-of-3 from the field. And he didn't start the game out with the starters, but come back from the half, and Shepherd had gotten early foul trouble, and Rick said, you know what, Jairus, you earned those minutes by playing so well in the first half. We're going to give them to you with the starters in the second unit. And he definitely took that opportunity and ran with it. So you love seeing that from him. And what's really interesting to me is how he was kind of viewed as a power forward coming into the draft. And now there's been a lot more talks about maybe him becoming that three. And Rick Carlisle mentioned it, how much he likes playing with size. Back before they traded for Siakam, when Jalen Smith was starting next to Turner, And I kind of think that that's maybe the way they're thinking. Hey, if we can just continue to get bigger with more size, like, hey, I'm not saying that we're going to see Jairus Walker start anytime soon, but like, this is maybe the long-term plan here in the next couple of years.
You know what, too? You saw his length, I think, play a role on the defensive end a couple of different times tonight. And the thing that I like about him and what we have seen more than anything else, Alex, is he lets the game come to him. And rarely when you have a dude that is that young, I mean, you're just going out there. I'm getting my spot right now. I'm getting some clock, and I'm going to go out there and make it happen. And, you know, I've got to be aggressive, super aggressive. He just kind of chilled out, and he lets the game come to him. And he's got the benefit of guys around him that can set him up and get him going. You could tell that early three got him going. There's no doubt that drive and that dunk when the Clippers didn't seem to be too worried about playing defense on that particular play, but that got him going too. But I love the fact that he is young and he lets that game come to him. That's beneficial for him. He just looked like he belonged tonight. And more times than not out there with this group, he looks like he belongs. And you know, I mentioned Mathurin and how big of a bummer that is, him not playing, but we could see an escalation in time for him, which will also be beneficial going into this postseason for he and the Pacers moving forward.
Absolutely. You know, it's a bit of a bummer there for Mathurin, obviously, because you know that this would be great experience for him just to kind of see what he can do. But unfortunately, it does open up a window of opportunity for other players, and that's where you got to get excited about. And I will say this, your guy, Miles Turner, what a start to the second half for the Pacers to just obliterate Zubac in that pick and pop, pick and roll coverage and take advantage of smaller guys. He only played like the first 4 or 5 minutes of that quarter too, because the Clippers went small and they took him out for Toppin, but 24 points on 8-12 shooting. Like, man, Miles Turner was hot, and I feel like he really kind of helped separate this lead the Pacers had, you know, just established before the quarter ended in the second to carrying over into the third.
You know, it's funny, Alex, we sit here and talk about that, and you're absolutely right regarding Miles. I had mentioned this last week, and I think it was toward the tail end of that slump of Tyrese Halliburton. And he's the one guy that they can't make up for. It kind of seems like they can make up for others in spot moments on this team, but he's one guy that they can't make up for anywhere, because he is the fuel to the engine that gets it going. And I think you have seen this, like, you watch him hit threes tonight, all right, as Tyrese Halliburton knocking down threes. But the thing that stands out to me is how he gets other guys, especially Miles, on this team going. And when he is at his best, and how you can tell he's out of that slump beyond just the three-point shooting, for example, is he gets Miles going, whether it's the start of the game or the start of the third quarter. You get in that whole pick and roll situation with Miles. There was a time when he was going through that slump where it almost felt like at times that it was Malcolm Brogdon running that, because you knew when you rolled off of that high ball screen that you weren't going to get that damn ball back from Brogdon whenever he ran that. But with Halliburton, it's just different. He gets guys going, and we could probably talk 30 minutes about how this Pacer team played well tonight, but I think we could condense it down to like 5 minutes and say, if Halliburton is playing at that level, this team is really, really good. And we saw that earlier this season, and we've been seeing that as of late. It looks to be like Halliburton's slump is over, and you can tell that, I think, well beyond his shot-making ability.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get back into that conversation with JMV, let's go ahead and take a quick break and talk about Unified Healing. You know, whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of Setting the Pace. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or simpler, EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in Indiana or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/pace to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/pace, P-A-C-E. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System. Now, let's get back to the show. Yeah, I would say, too, the last three games, he's really looked bouncy. But even in that Lakers game, I didn't feel like he was really hunting for a shot. Kind of seemed like he was settling with the Lakers defense and not trying to force too much. But even there at the end of that game, the shot making seemed like it was still relevant as he was hitting some big buckets to kind of make this a closer game. So I am kind of curious, though, your thoughts on what you've seen from Haliburton and how much you've kind of seen him grow the last maybe week or so, because it, you know, Rick Carlisle talked about it after the game against the Warriors, had how he looked so much different from just 2 weeks ago. And he did have a pretty scary fall there in the second quarter. Yeah. I think Kawhi Leonard was playing pretty hard defense on him and he slipped. And I think he was a little bit nervous about it too. So just constantly having that injury in the back of your mind and always trying to play it safe. I mean, where is your head at with Tyrese Haliburton and what he looks like so far?
I think that, to me, that Haliburton was obviously trying to come back from that injury. That was a big deal. But I also think that he is just kind of settling in to a life and a career where at that elite level, you're going to be the target of absolutely everything every single night. It was almost like a little bit post All-Star break, but there was like an avalanche of just everything. I mean, he couldn't go anywhere without being inundated with everybody and great this and great that. And it was a breakneck type of speed. And that's what happens, Alex, when you're elite level in the NBA. That's the type of attention you get. But it doesn't stop with just, you know, both on the floor and your personal life and your existence of being a star. Other teams are going to advance scout you even more, and you're going to be even more the emphasis of trying to take you away. And we have seen the consequences of when he is not at his fullest, when he is not, you know, doing what he does that we've all gotten used to watching, it doesn't sit well with the Pacers. I mean, they struggle, and other teams have been putting him, or at least during that slump, putting him in that situation. I just think it's an all-encompassing thing. You had that injury, you have the stardom, you have the NBA All-Star break, you have all that going on, and it kind of seemed like at that moment, for a couple, 3 weeks, it was kind of wearing him out a little bit. But I think we have seen here recently he's gotten a second win.
Is this a fair statement to say Pascal Siakam is the best player on the Pacers right now, but Tyrese Haliburton is still the face?
I think if you're going to go and want to get a bucket, he's going to be the guy to go to, right? He's going to be the guy where you're going to think, all right, we're going to get him, and he's going to go out there and he's going to get us something right here. All around player-wise, there's no doubt that Haliburton is the guy. But go out and get me a stinking score, because that's what we need right now. Man, Alex, how many times as Pacer fans have we sat back and you just wished you had somebody like that? Mm-hmm. I think everybody, we've liked everybody, right? I mean, guys have been good for this team and they've been fun. But how many times have we sat back and thought, man, if you just had one guy that was a damn bucket getter, somebody's going to go out there and get him something when it's necessary. That's that guy. That's the other thing he's shown me, certainly over the past couple of weeks, is you set him up and he's going to go get you what you need production wise. And that's something this Pacer team has not seen around here in a long time. And I'm talking about high percentage. I'm not just talking about, you know, fading away from three against the shot clock, but high percentage plays to where 75%+ of the time it kind of feels like he's going to make it. I know he even missed. Hell, he should have had 40 tonight. He missed like two or three layups in that game, to be honest with you. But he's a bucket getter, and that should make Pacer fans feel good because you're relying on that when the defense gets tough. When you get into a postseason and things really get tight, that's the type of dude that's going to be the difference in winning and losing in a playoff game and a playoff series. And the Pacers finally have that. It's got to make you feel good.
I mean, he is a professional bucket getter. That there's no doubt about that. And the angles that he takes on some of his shots are so incredible to me. I really enjoy just seeing how he can make something out of nothing time and time again. And the free throw discrepancy for him since he's been traded to Indiana has gone down quite a bit. And if you watch the way he plays, he gets fouled quite a bit, but I think because he's kind of a herky-jerky kind of guy, kind of an awkward guy in terms of trying to attack the basket, he doesn't always get the benefit of the doubt with the free throws. But I like the way that he kind of just stays, you know, stays poised with everything, doesn't allow the officials to get him too rattled, and just continues to fight through that. But I will say this, one thing I like about Siakam, obviously tonight Jeremiah Johnson's interviewing him and asking him about the game, and he kind of talked about it for a second, but then immediately started talking about how proud he was of Jairus Walker. So I'm just kind of curious your thoughts, like that relationship in terms of like him being a mentor to someone so young and understanding what it's like going through an up and down rookie season.
Well, if it's like Joe Flacco, you're going to say, well, I'm not here to hold somebody's hand. No, that's what you want. I mean, that's what you want from your guy. That's what you want. He fits so well here. I mean, he truly does. And really, you can see the joy these guys have. And we see it in winning, right? I mean, you see the joy in winning. But you can see how much these guys certainly look like they love playing with one another. And that is a big deal. And you saw that in that interview with JJ at the end, too. It just kind of seems like when you were looking for somebody, like I talked about a professional bucket getter, you had mentioned, too, that he fits perfectly, finally, into that. It was a period of adjustment, don't get me wrong, and it was an adjustment for everybody, but he was that missing piece that we've been looking for a long time. I got a question for you, and the guys brought it up on the broadcast, Chris, I think, and Quinn talked about it, and I remember going back before we started the season, and you probably got this on Setting the Pace, you probably got this, you know, just talking in general on social media about, hey, go out and get value for TJ McConnell because he's not going to play anyway. And are you glad that some of those dumbasses out there that were telling you that did not get their wish? How valuable has he been? And then with what these guys were talking about tonight, and I really didn't think about it in those terms until they brought it up. Like if you're talking about sixth men of the year or guys off the bench, man, he has been as valuable as anybody to any team this year. And the way I don't get this, I guess. Why dudes are so damn surprised when he blows by them or gets by them and gets them the glass? It's like they've never seen a scouting report or never watched this guy play. He continues to get his when he wants to because, Alex, here's what TJ McConnell has. And everybody kind of looks at, well, he can't shoot a jump shot very well. He can't shoot a three. He can't do this and he can't do that. It is a skill. Effort is a skill. And he has an effort. He has an extra gear that not many have, which is perfect for this group. And I think off the bench among those in the NBA that have played at a high level, he would have to be mentioned in that particular group.
No, and I feel like that's a great point to bring up. I mean, it's something we did talk about, obviously, at the beginning of the season and kind of as his minutes were not there and non-existent, and it kind of felt like, what are they going to do with this contract? Because the thought was Mathurin starts, Nimhard's a backup point guard. Where's McConnell fit into this? Obviously, injuries played a part, but that did not play a part in whether McConnell was getting on the floor or not. Rick Carlisle cannot get him enough, TJ McConnell. And can you blame him? No, because you talked about it. Like, he only knows one way to play, and that's play hard. And unfortunately, there are a lot of guys that don't know how to play hard or consistently play hard. And that's one thing. Like, McConnell, for all 82 games that he's out there, he plays one way. It's the exact same way every single time. And we talked about this probably about a week or two ago what separates him from the rest of the guys on this team in terms of doing that? And I said, the problem is he's never been told how great he is, and he's always had to work for everything. So I think he kind of, you know, kind of respects and appreciates the grind a little bit more than some of these guys that are higher lottery picks that have kind of been given more opportunities. They didn't really have to go out there and earn it as much as he had to, because it feels like every team he's been on, every situation he's been in, his back's been against the wall, and he's had to fight and claw his way to get the respect and get those minutes. But, you know, he's not going to win Sixth Man of the Year. I'll just put it out there, because there's not enough people watching Indiana, or his numbers aren't that gaudy. But if you look at the impact that he has on this team, there is no doubt in my mind that it is clearly worthy of being mentioned in that Sixth Man conversation.
No, there's no doubt about that, too. And just what he brings – he once told me that it's not a fear, but his thought has always been, if he ever slowed down, if he ever geared down, then that's, you know, the difference between him being a winner and a loser is kind of how he's explained it to me. I've explained it this way. If anybody out there has ever seen the film Kingpin, where Randy Quaid is an Amish bowler, right? And supposedly a good bowler, and Woody Harrelson sees him and wants to make him into a world-class type of bowler. And in working on his game, he didn't like just bowl the average frames of what is a game of bowling to get his score. He always felt, and this is kind of in jest, obviously, it was a funny movie, but I always had to go three or four more frames, because I have to prove, or as an Amish person, I have to prove to everybody else that, you know, we're worthy. So we have to go above and beyond everybody else. And I've always, you know, made that a point to describe TJ McConnell. He has grown up knowing that he has to go above and beyond what everybody else does. And there is nobody in the NBA that does that better than him. Not one person. And I will constantly tell you that even though people don't recognize it often enough, effort is a skill. And there is not a damn soul, Alex, in the NBA that gives more effort every moment on the floor than TJ McConnell. That's his skill. That is special. And that has a profound impact on that basketball team every night.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree. And it feels like too often, especially in those first quarters, Pace to get off to a slow start, here comes McConnell, put up 6 or 8 points and just get this team right back into the fold. And you can't understate how much that means. Even though he might only finish with 12 points, those 8 points in that moment kept the Pacers in the game, brought them back into the game, and gave them some life. So I'm getting a quote here from Rick Carlisle saying that the key to the game was Jairus Walker. So just really good stuff right there. I mean, I know that it's not very often we get to talk about Jairus, because he doesn't play a whole lot. So this is just really good to hear Rick say that. And I'm kind of curious, do you think that this is something that maybe allows him to get more into the rotation moving forward? Or do you think this is a, thanks for what you did against the Clippers, we're going to go back to what we have against the Bulls with our normal rotation?
Well, do you think that, let's just say right now, if Rick had it to do all over again, knowing what he knows right now, do you think he would have started Walker out on Paul George?
Oh, yeah, probably. That.
Instead of Ben Shepherd? Instead of Ben Shepherd. And really, it didn't matter. I like Ben Shepherd too. But length and the athleticism that Walker brings, it's such a big damn deal. And I don't think you can look past that. Like, we're thinking in terms of the rest of the regular season and then into the postseason when things are going to get tight. And you know that Mathurin's not going to be there. So, you know, why not have a nice mixture of these two rookies doing some things? And if you can have Jairus Walker out there and he can play eventful, effective minutes for you, absolutely. And also, I'm sure Rick is meaningful in saying that, but it's also, hey, this is how you play tonight. Keep this crap going. Keep it up here. And you're going to get rewarded with more minutes. I think that's also a message that the coach is probably trying to get to the rookie as well. But yeah, it's good. Alex, I have said this, and I think this starts with the Laker game coming up here when they come to Indy. I looked at the last 8 games of the Pacers schedule as kind of a runway, you know, an opportunity for takeoff, a springboard, if you will, to get on what is so necessary to start a postseason, and that is an effective winning run. And when you look at some of those teams that are mixed up in that melting pot of the final eight, a game like tonight gives you a little bit of a thought that maybe they can do that. You know, maybe you start with the Lakers, you get that revenge. I think Miami's in the mix in there too. But these are all incredibly winnable games. And then I kind of think about, well, wait a minute. There have been like 8 or 9 winnable games this year that they've lost, most of which have been home. So, you know, maybe I shouldn't think about it that way. I'm just looking at it in terms of all good teams have regular season springboards into the postseason. And I want to see the Pacers do that. And that opportunity looms. And a night like tonight, I think, gives you a great deal of insight that this team could be open and up for it too. Gives you a lot of really solid, positive hope as we enter the stretch run of this season, which is necessary for teams, hopefully, to be able to advance from whatever their position is.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think that this team kind of needs to hit their stride at the right time, and going into the playoffs would be the perfect time to do it. Obviously, you take a tough loss to the Lakers on Sunday, but that doesn't really mean that much to me because I still think there's a way they can figure things out with the rest of the schedule. It's not the hardest schedule. It's not the easiest schedule, but there's a lot of winnable games there. And momentum, I mean, I don't know if you really think momentum is a real thing, but I do. And some people say that it's not a
real
thing.
I do too. But I do too.
If you're feeling good about yourself heading into the last part of the season, like, that's going to only help your confidence in the playoffs. And I am kind of curious, you know, it's all jumbled up there right now with 6, 7, and 8. And then really 3, 4, and 5 are all kind of jumbled up there with Orlando. I'm trying to remember who else, New York and Cleveland. So when you look at those three teams and then who Indiana, where they're at right now at 6, is there a team that you think would make a better fit for the Pacers in a 3-6 matchup?
I know this kind of sounds crazy because I think they are 2-1 against the Pacers this year, but I don't think – can Orlando
get a first round matchup? Yeah, they're not too far away.
I'm not – there are times when I guess it's maybe the last time we saw them was not one of their more impressive efforts, so maybe that's what I'm thinking about. Probably Orlando more than anything else. Cleveland can be a little bit scary when Donovan Mitchell is a part of it, but the Pacers looked good when he was a part of it. They just didn't – they weren't effective when he wasn't a part of it. So, and I'm kind of curious what Cleveland's going to look like in the postseason, considering how they looked in the first round a year ago, which was an absolute mess, if you remember. So, you know, maybe Cleveland, maybe Orlando would stick out to me right now as really good matchups. But this team needs to close and close strong. I'm with you on momentum, too. I don't know where people believe that momentum doesn't play a factor. Yeah. Because momentum creates positive thoughts, confidence. I mean, think about this from a collegiate standpoint. How much momentum do you think the Boilermakers have right now? How much did they create this past weekend at Gainbridge Fieldhouse? And to think that that is not meaningful is, to me, ridiculous. So I want to see this team playing as well as possible, whether it's momentum and a build in confidence or what have you. I want to see them playing as well as they possibly can down the stretch run of this season in preparation for the postseason. But probably Orlando, probably Cleveland would stand out to me. Like people say the Bucks all the time, right? I don't know. The Bucks to me would have them in the crosshairs right now. I think that you probably don't want that.
Not yet.
If I were thinking about it. No, it's just – I mean, it's one thing that I don't know if you're ready for that type of prime time, if you know what I mean, Alex, right there. So maybe those two aforementioned teams would be really good first-round matchups.
Yeah, we talked about this the last couple of episodes with different people too, and I said Orlando just because they have the lack of experience too in the playoffs. I think that's just a big factor there for Indiana. Just I know a lot of these guys don't have the playoff experience, but Pascal's won a championship – And then you've got Miles, who's been in plenty of playoff series as well. T.J. McConnell's been in those moments. So, and Rick Carlisle, too, where Jamal Mosley has not really coached in those moments either. So I think that it's a good opportunity there to take, not advantage, but have a better chance against a young team. But, you know, you bring up Purdue. They obviously made it to the Sweet 16, and I think that's great, obviously. I am not a Purdue guy, but I will still root for them to do well because there's a lot of people that listen to this show that love Purdue. So I can be the bigger man and put my IU bias aside because IU sucks.
Well, let me stop you right there for a moment, too, because IU fans should all recognize this. If you wanted a head coach to coach your team for the long-term future, how many IU fans would say Matt Painter? You know, Matt Painter is exactly what is necessary, the type of coach like that in Bloomington. He does exactly what they would like to see any head coach do for them. So, yeah, I understand. I mean, you know, you're an IU fan or what have you. I just want to win around here. I want to get some damn winning. We're so used to losing and talking about next year or talking about what's going to happen 5 years down the road. I don't give a damn who it is. Just go out there and win, bring some winning around here, make us all feel a little better.
I agree with that. And I was going to say, shout out to the IU women tonight for getting their second victory.
Yep.
Mackenzie Holmes had a great game in this one. And that was really close there, but they pulled it out in the end. And, of course, Purdue, their women's team, did beat Butler in the NIT tonight, 62-51. So have to bring that up, even though it was a little bit of, you know, hometown team versus hometown team action. Purdue got the upset there over Butler. Butler was the higher seed. But, you know, I just love seeing all these colleges do. I think Notre Dame, they won. They made it to the Sweet 16, I believe, right yesterday. So, you know, just the college hoops in Indiana for women is just – they're killing it out of the park. And you got Caitlin Clark probably coming to the Fever, too. So it's an exciting time for women's basketball in Indiana.
Yeah, no doubt about that, too. And don't forget about the Indiana State Sycamores, who got completely hosed out of the NCAA tournament. And a shout-out right there to Dr. Chuck and the rest of that ridiculously inept committee that decided to go with Virginia in there and not Indiana State. But Indiana State's doing exactly what they needed to do. They're making a case for everybody that argued on their behalf, just like me, to be accurate on this, with the win over SMU, with the win over Minnesota, and then obviously later on tonight, as it stands, this is, you know, very early in Tuesday morning when we're talking right now, you get Edgerrin James' son and Cincinnati over at the Holman Center for the right to go to the semifinals. But yeah, Indiana State, in all honesty, is going to probably end up losing their head coach, and with that, probably two or three players that if their head coach came back, they would all end up coming back and running it back next year. But, you know, I know this from being over there, how much I love being over there, how much I love Indiana State from my time there, that community, Terre Haute, Vigo County, soaking it all up. They're deserving of moments like this, and it's been really cool to see.
Absolutely. I mean, it's I haven't been able to watch a whole lot of college basketball since I'm doing this on the daily, but I have been keeping up with Indiana State's story. 30-6. It was pretty much a hose job that they were not in the NCAA tournament. And I feel like there's a good chance we would have seen them in the Sweet 16 based on how well they're playing and the matchup they would have probably drawn.
I just love this, too. Like, you take guys like Ryan Conwell of Pike High School, who went to South Florida and then, you know, double back and transferred to ISU, or Isaiah Swope, who went to Castle and then Southern Indiana, and then came to Indiana State. Those are guys that a lot of the schools around here that we know very well didn't have the time nor the inclination to believe, and especially one in Indy that just hired a new coach. Didn't think either one of those guys could play at IUPUI, for God's sake, which is absolutely crazy. It's good because I love to see these kids show exactly their worth. And, you know, you mentioned McConnell with that consistent chip on his shoulder. I love to see that because I think that's added value that you're going to get with non-entitlement. And you can see that with those two guys, for example, with Indiana State. You see that with TJ McConnell. I just think that that gives an extra edge. I think Purdue's players are kind of like that too. They don't want to mess with any crap. Like Zach Edey, you know, gets interviewed, says about five words. He didn't have time for that. He has all of his efforts into winning a national championship and making up for last year and going down in history as the greatest team to ever play at Purdue. So I admire those that play with that consistent chip on their shoulder because it brings an edge.
No, you're totally right about that. So let's go ahead and wrap this one up, JB. Yep. I really appreciate your time.
How long are we in here? How deep are we? What's the time?
I honestly haven't even kept track, to be honest with you. It just feels like a good time to close it out here. But
let's show everybody really quick. It is 1:28 a.m. right now. I got to get up at 5:45.
Man, you're beating me up. Why did you stay up so late for this?
No, 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 because you asked me to.
I appreciate that. That's a good friend right
you
there.
You asked me to. I played basketball right up until Pacer game time too.
Man.
So I'm gonna go in there. I gotta go in the shower and everything. I stank.
Man, you're getting like
right
an hour
now.
Of sleep.
We had an hour of sleep, and I'll probably pass out once I take the kids to school, to be honest with you. But
you
know,
you do have that
maybe
leverage.
I'll catch up. I do have a little bit of luxury in that capacity. Go ahead.
Yes. But anyway, I do appreciate your time, and it's
yep.
a lot of fun doing these post-game recaps, especially after the Pacers win. But I think it's going to be an exciting next couple of weeks for the Pacers as they get ready for the playoffs, and I'm excited to see what they do. So it's nice, though, to not be able to talk about trades right now and just talk about basketball.
Yeah. Yeah, especially when it's like Miles Turner. Like, we don't have to talk about Miles Turner being traded, right?
Yeah.
Hey, did you hear me when I had Chad Buchanan on? I was serious about this, and he is too. I asked him if they still had the offer sheet that they got for DeAndre Ayton, and he said they do. And I kind of wanted to get it, and he said he would give it to me. I'm almost going to frame it on the wall.
Oh, really?
The offer sheet of Ayton. Yeah, yeah. So I constantly make fun of him for that, even though I think Ayton's playing better in Portland right now, at least has been when he got off that air mattress, evidently. But which is pretty funny. But yeah, I constantly kind of joke about the whole offer sheet thing. They know how I feel about Miles. And the other part of Miles that I love is he just is himself, man. And he is so good for this community. And that's part of it around here. You're good on the floor, and you're good in the community, and that's an asset. And he is a tremendous asset, and it's good not to be talking about him and trade rumors and such. Hopefully that didn't happen this summer.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing. It's going to be coming back because he is an expiring contract once again next year.
Right. But
this year, it felt like there was hardly any talks about him being traded, and it felt like maybe his most consistent season so far, with nothing really to prove, just go out there and play basketball. It's nice, you know.
You know who likes him, right? You know who really likes him?
Who's that?
Tyrese Halliburton really likes him.
Yeah,
Halliburton
right.
really likes playing with him. So does Siakam. And we'll see if that plays a role into the longer-term future around here of Miles. So.
Your two best on-court assets, what you're around, I think that's going to play a big factor in how much you're around here with this team moving forward.
Exactly.
Let alone what he brings to this franchise in terms of his familiarity with the fan base and things like that. But JMV, go ahead and let everybody know they can find you out on social real quick and what you got coming up on the show this week.
Well, hell, that's a good question. Where am I? At JMV1070, I think on X, right? I've got I'll have Dusty May, the new head coach of Michigan. He's a high school friend of mine. Kind of getting dragged through it. Have you seen the story?
I haven't.
Louisville? Yeah, so evidently Bob Valvano, who is a Louisville talk show host, was doing the NIT game with Indiana State and Minnesota. And he said that Josh Schertz, Indiana State's coach, said the reason why that Dusty didn't want to mess with the Louisville job that was open too was because of the crazy fans and death threats. So for whatever reason, Bob Valvano goes on his radio show and there's a dumbass and says that. So now you have Dusty May have to say, you know, I was fine with Louisville. I just thought that Michigan was a better fit for me and my family. It had nothing to do with any of that. I didn't say any of that. You know, in the meanwhile, Schertz has got not only a game coming up against Cincinnati, but he's also been mentioned as a candidate at Louisville. So because one dude opens his yap up and says stupid crap, then everybody is breathing down the neck of two good friends of mine, and Josh Schertz, Indiana State's head coach, and Dusty May, the new Michigan head coach. Just in that's like sports radio. Sports radio in general is basically built on the foundation of dumbassery right there, and that's like the high-level dumbassery from Valvano. But Dusty May is going to join us later on this week. I think Andrew Ketelon of CBS has the call on Friday, the Boilers and Gonzaga. And by the way, too, Gonzaga is a good team. Mark Few is one of the best coaches anywhere, not just in college basketball. That is not a Gonzaga-esque type of team with the level of talent we're used to. But, man, it almost looks like that Few has a really good time coaching these guys up without the expectations. Think about it. They didn't win the WCC regular season title as they normally do, not the conference tournament title as they normally do. And lo and behold, once again, what is it, 9 consecutive years in the Sweet 16? That is a new era in college hoop blue blood right there in Gonzaga. They'll be a tough out, but it's not your normal type of a Gonzaga team. But Andrew Ketelon has that call coming up on Friday of CBS. He's going to join us. And, hell, I can't remember. But it should be good. Oh, I know. I got to go to opening day, Major League Baseball, Joe's Grill, Thursday. That's a tradition in Castleton at Joe's Grill for opening day. And then our tavern tour stop with Heaven Hill Distillery is at a first-time place on Friday, Wits Inn off of 31. Down in Whiteland, Indiana, at the Wits End with Heaven Hill Distillery on Friday, and then Jambi Takeover on Saturday, where you can call in and get me to play music for your ass. So, yeah.
There we go. There is the rundown for Jambi's schedule this week. You don't want to miss out on that, but make sure you're following him on social so you can be reminded of those daily updates so you know who's coming on the show and what exactly. But this is a great Pacers win, so we are excited about that, and we'll be back tomorrow with Caitlin Cooper to talk all things Pacers basketball, who did inspire the podcast title of this episode today. So thank you for that. Past California is what she put out there on Twitter, and I thought that was perfect. So
nice.
So I wanted to give her a shout out for that. She'll be on the show tomorrow. But JMB, thanks again so much, and we'll do it again.
You got it, buddy. Thank you.